So after supper, on the night before the first day of school, Morley sent Dave and the kids to Lawler's Drugs to buy school supplies. Morley stayed home. She had already done clothes, shoes, medical forms, the dentist, and groceries. Dave stopped at the magazines and said, "Choose what you need and I'll meet you at the cash." Sam was first back. He dumped a handful of stuff on the counter and he said, "There, can I have gum too?" He had chosen a pink pearl eraser, a package of 5 eraser tips that fit on the top of pencils, a bottle of whiteout, and a dispenser of Correcto tape. "What about something to put your mistakes into?" said Dave. "What about a binder? What about a pen?" "Pencils," said Sam, "not pens." He came back a few moments later with 5 pencils and a red 3-ring binder with Spider-Man on the front. "There," he said, "can I have some gum?" Stephanie chose an oversized nylon binder that zipped up, a package of 6 pastel-colored Hillary notebooks, a giant pack of loose leaf, and a $49 fountain pen. "No way," said Dave. "Put the pen back." "Can I have gum?" she said. The next time Stephanie floated up to the cash, she was holding 5 little cardboard boxes with cellophane windows. "Labels," she said. She had big white labels and small white labels and labels with fancy red borders and green bordered labels and a package of little red dots. There wasn't enough stuff in their house for all the labels she had. "Please," she said, "I love peeling them off the paper. I love sticking them on things." "Put the red dots back," said Dave. He had to draw a line somewhere. And the fountain pen. Dave bought himself a wooden ruler with a metal ink strip for old time's sake, a small blue notebook because the pages tore out so elegantly, and a pack of gum. On their way home, they stopped for ice cream. The world seemed perfect. The end of another summer, his children beside him with their new stuff. When they got home, Sam threw his bag on the couch. "I got Correcto tape," he said. "You can cover anything." "And an eraser," said Dave, "and pencils." Morley was making coffee. Stephanie spread her new books out on the kitchen table. "Should I use blue or green for history?" she asked. "What about the pink one?" said Morley. "I always used pink for history." "That's dumb," said Stephanie. "Pink's for math." Morley wasn't about to argue. It was the end of a long day. She had been grocery shopping before supper. She was tired. She had spent longer than usual in the supermarket, aimlessly gliding down the aisles, looking for things she could put in her children's lunch bags. Something new, something surprising, something they would eat. Just one day, she wanted one of them to come home and say, "Gee, lunch was good." You hear that just once. You hear that just once and you could die happy. Mostly what she heard was, "I hate vanilla pudding." "Or don't send those yogurts with the exploding aluminum lids." Mostly what she got back was criticism and half-eaten lunches. "What's your name?" "What's your name?" "Who?" "Richard, it's good to have you here, Richard." On the afternoon, I don't know whether I'm going to be able to get through this with you, Richard. That's the problem. So anyway, she was she was having trouble with the lunches, if you remember. I'll just recap here. We had Honeysuckle Rose. And then the kids went to Lawler's Drugs to get some stuff, and Dave went with them. And then Morley went to the grocery store, and she was having a hard time getting lunch. She wasn't the only one. On the afternoon before the first day of school, the supermarket seemed to be full of women like her, aisles of mothers trapped in the same vortex. Defeated mothers, with defeated eyes, staring into the middle distance in search of school lunch. Morley felt like she'd tried everything in the store at one time or another. What kept her moving was the faint hope that there was a new idea on a shelf somewhere. She knew she was on a fool's mission. She knew even if she found something that they had never tried, she'd be crazy to buy it. Her enthusiasm for unproved items tempered by the knowledge that anything the kids turned their noses up at would be her lunch until it was finished. That's why she didn't buy in bulk anymore. Because she had learned when it came to school lunch, her children couldn't be trusted. Last year they said they liked mango juice. So she had bought flats of mango juice from one of those discount superstores, carrying them from the car and stacking them in the basement. Enough mango juice to see them through Christmas. A pile of mango juice as high as her waist. The day she packed the first mango juice in their lunch, they both came home and denied ever liking it. Why did you give us that stuff? Morley drank mango juice at lunch every day for 2 months straight. She used it to wash down the prune apple cereal bars that no one else would eat. It was either that or throw the cereal bars out, and she was damned if she was going to do that. Even Arthur, the dog, would only eat them grudgingly, leaving little mounds of wet oats around the house, which were not a pleasant thing to step in, especially if you stepped in them unexpectedly at night, in the dark, with bare feet. This year, for the first day's lunch, Morley bought Kaiser rolls, an expensive salami, some crisp new apples, and chocolate milk, and not the little ones, the big ones, full pints. Short of stuffing their lunch bags with licorice, something that she had considered doing, $2 worth of licorice each, and maybe a Coke or a Jolt Cola. Nothing else. Gee, Mom, great lunch. Short of stuffing their lunch bags with candies, the Kaiser rolls and the expensive salami were the best that she could do. The kids were in bed by 10. When she went into Sam's room to say goodnight, he was reading Mad Magazine. "Be careful," he said, as she stepped over his clothes. Sam had laid everything he was going to wear on the floor, the red T-shirt tucked into the jeans, his new sneakers sticking out from the bottom of the pant legs, like he could slide into them. Morley knelt down in the darkness and pulled off a price tag that was still attached to the jeans. Stephanie had all her notebooks stacked on her desk, all neatly labeled. She'd used the labels with the red borders for her name and put a large blank white one below it to fill in the name of the subject. "It's like Christmas Eve," said Morley to Dave when she came downstairs. "It's like that perfect suspended moment on Christmas Eve when everyone's in bed and the presents are under the tree and the only thing left is potential, when everything has the possibility of perfection." Before she went to bed, Morley looked in on both her children one more time. Sam was sound asleep on his back, his hands folded behind his head, a huge grin on his face. Stephanie still had her light on, reading a fashion magazine. "Lights off," said Morley. And then she went back into Sam's room and stood there for a moment, looking at him, smiling in his sleep, reaching out with her fingers and touching her son's grin. And then she went to bed. And she lay in bed and she thought about the year ahead and she felt pleased. First day of school was like launching a new ship. The kids had been in dry dock all summer. Tomorrow it was time to push them out to sea again. Everything was ship shape. She had done everything she was supposed to do. She began to run through the day in her mind. She got up and checked the alarm. It was set. Their clothes were ready. Their books were ready. She'd bought a box of some awful cereal for breakfast, a cereal that would change the color of the milk they poured on it to a bright primary color, a cereal with enough sugar in it to wake them up on the first early morning of the school year. And she imagined the perfect lunch that she'd prepare, the chocolate milk, the good salami, and she'd wrap the Kaisers in saran wrap instead of wax paper so they could see what she had made them. She thought of these things, and they made her smile. And then as she lay in her bed in the darkness, Morley frowned. The lunch bags were missing. Each child had a reusable nylon lunch bag with a Velcro fastener at the top. And the lunch bags hadn't crossed her consciousness all summer. Morley frowned because she knew they weren't in the lunch bag drawer where they were supposed to be. She rolled over, so she was looking towards the bedroom door, towards the stairs, and she tried to remember if maybe she'd washed the lunch bags. Maybe they were hanging in the basement. But she couldn't remember them at all, couldn't imagine where they might be. She was sure they weren't in the basement. Because she wanted the day to be perfect, she lay in bed, and in her imagination, she looked through the kitchen. She did an inventory of the drawers and cupboards, but no matter where she looked, the bags were nowhere to be found. They weren't in the drawer where they belonged or the cupboard where she put things she wasn't using. She lay there for maybe 10 minutes thinking about the lunch bags before she was suddenly seized by a horrible notion. When the thought came, she sat up in bed abruptly. She knew exactly where the lunch bags were. She'd passed them 100 times since school was out. They were in the kids' backpacks, which were hanging downstairs by the back door, where the kids had left them in June, after the last day of school, where they'd been all summer, unpacked and festering. Morley switched on the light beside her bed and got out of bed. She couldn't sleep without knowing the truth. She retrieved Stephanie's backpack first, carrying it from the hook by the back door to the kitchen table. It must have weighed 50 pounds, crammed with every book Stephanie had used in grade 11. How could she have forgotten about this? She pulled out the books one by one, and she made a pile on the kitchen table until she got to the very bottom of the backpack. And there at the bottom of the pack was a blue nylon lunch bag with a Velcro fastener, as flat as a pancake. Morley opened it slowly and peered inside. Everything had fused together. The weight of the book squeezing the life out of the uneaten lunch. So it had hardened into a leather-like strip. Morley put the bag down and walked across the kitchen and got a pair of yellow rubber gloves from under the sink. She put them on, and then she pulled at the leather thing in her daughter's lunch bag. It came out in one piece. It didn't resemble any kind of food Morley remembered having in her kitchen. In fact, it didn't resemble food. It looked more like the pictures she had seen in National Geographic magazine of dead bog people. She put it back in the bag. Sam's lunch bag was on the top of his backpack. Morley thought she remembered packing him a pear on the last day of school and a container of yogurt, one of the ones with the exploding aluminum covers. She pulled the lunch bag out of the backpack and opened it carefully. It was dark and damp in there. It was like a compost heap. And for a moment, she thought of reaching in, and then she thought better of it. Instead of reaching in, she closed the bag and put it back where she found it, at the top of Sam's backpack. And she hung the backpack up on one of the hooks by the back door, beside Stephanie's. And she went back upstairs and she got into bed, but not before she had reset the alarm clock for 15 minutes earlier. So there would be time in the morning for the moment she imagined now as she lay in bed, the moment when Sam and Stephanie were eating the sugar cereal, and she said, "Where are your lunch bags?" and she sent them to find them for themselves. It was 1:30 in the morning. They'd be up in less than 6 hours. As she drifted to sleep, Morley thought of the bottle of whiteout on Sam's desk, and she wondered when he would first have to use it, and whether maybe tomorrow she should go to Lawler's Drugs and get Stephanie that fountain pen, prepared to do anything, anything, to make the year ahead a perfect year for her children. Anything but cleaning out those bags.